As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On Total Soccer Show, the podcast where we take a deeper dive into the meatiest topic of the week. And this week we had little choice but to head to Stamford Bridge to figure out how and why a manager who was given around £280 million to spend this summer was relieved of his duties this week. The morning after Chelsea's unexpected loss at Dynamo Zagreb, Thomas Tuchel was given his marching orders. And 2 days later, on Thursday, Graham Potter was appointed as the next Chelsea manager. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me to discuss Tuchel's rise and fall at Chelsea, plus the future under Mr. Potter, is Taylor Rockwell. Hello, Taylor.
Hello. I look forward to never having to do a silent plane ride and then silent bus trip with people who want to fire me.
Okay. Graham Ruffin, hello.
Hi, Ryan Bailey.
And Joe Lowry, hello, sir.
Ahoy.
Taylor, I sent some first-person perspective you were giving from someone else's perspective there.
Yeah, the reports about the flight back from after that Zagreb loss where a lot of unnamed sources, definitely players and staff, were talking about how the front of the plane and the front of the bus where Tuchel and the Chelsea ownership group were sat was silent and not friendly. That feels like a very awkward trip. I'm guessing the firing the next morning was equally, if not more, awkward.
Wow. Silent and not friendly is my brand. I can't believe they're taking it as well. That's crazy. The good news for the listener is I have not seen any of the Harry Potter films, so I will not be making any bad Potter puns in this podcast, but you guys have at it. One thing that did catch our attention that Graham put on our Slack chat was Jules Koundé, his IG story, with a picture of him face-palming with the caption, "I almost joined them, #ForzaBarca," obviously referring to Chelsea. I think there's something wrong, Graham, when the stability and sensible ownership of Barcelona is a preferable option to going to Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, not quite sure that Mr. Koundé has got the stability that he was looking for in a new club, but he might be justified in thinking that Barcelona at this point are slightly more stable than Chelsea, which, as you say, is some statement.
It is indeed. All right, Tata, let's outline the facts here. What got us to Tuchel's sacking? A man who can, you know, win a few pretty high-profile trophies with this club and not that long afterwards be sent on his marching way, and having seemingly played a big part in structuring the Chelsea team this season, not least through transfers, to be relieved in this manner is a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I would say so. And I think there are lots of different factors. I think there are also two sort of narratives there that are fighting for control. There is the Chelsea ownership group narrative, which is that Tuchel had sort of divided the locker room, didn't seem like he was getting people back on side, and was really difficult to work with, didn't want to help with transfers, didn't want to have communication, and so they felt like it was an untenable situation. From Thomas Tuchel's perspective, I think it comes across more so as I helped win the Champions League 18 months ago. You had an ownership change. I had to front the media and handle all of those very difficult questions about that transition in ownership and about Roman Abramovich being in charge. Then we lost our entire like sporting director department. Petr Cech leaves. Maria Granovskaya leaves. And It ends up being Todd Boehly, the new owner, who is also sort of the interim sporting director, and he is relying on Thomas Tuchel's advice, I think, which was not a thing that Tuchel had necessarily agreed to, and that's where some communication issues come in. You look at the transfers, and I think both sides say they were heavily involved in the transfer activity. So I think it comes down to a lot of communication issues and then some on-field issues on top.
Indeed. And Joe, it is the on-field issues that will have ultimately led to this decision, right?
I mean, yes, that's part of it. I think there is a huge set of factors.
Joe.
I think there's a huge set of factors about the behind-the-scenes stuff here. From everything I've read and from The Athletic and from other outlets, this idea is that Tuchel was going to be gone even before Chelsea lost to Dynamo Zagreb in the Champions League the other day. So it seems to me that the ownership of Chelsea, Todd Boehly and Clear Lake Capital and the other folks involved in his consortium had an eye on this the entire time. There's been a lot made about, you know, it'd been 100 days of Chelsea's new ownership in charge. And throughout that 100 days, they had an eye to on or around the 100th day of basically evaluating all of the key parts of this club. And Thomas Tuchel is obviously a key part of this club. So sure, the results were poor. So they beat Everton on opening day in the Premier League. They drew with Tottenham 2-2 the next week. That gave us the best moment of the European season so far. Tuchel and Conte handshake gate. They lost to Leeds 3-0, got battered in that game, beat Leicester 2-1, lost to Southampton, beat West Ham, lost to Dynamo Zagreb. So very mixed results. And for Chelsea, that's not good enough. There are even poor results that go back to really ever since the fall of last year. After Chelsea are riding the high of the Champions League, they come in with high expectations. Last year, Lukaku's joined. This team can challenge for the title. That does not happen. They start to fall off. That is all very real. And Ryan, I'm not saying that's not a part of this. And I think more than most folks like to look to the on-field stuff. And Chelsea had not been getting the job done. But you talk about and you look at and you read about all of the things that happen behind the scenes. You have Thomas Tuchel's agent coming in and doing some things for Chelsea in the player recruitment space because Tuchel is so sick of doing that stuff. Yeah. He's so concerned about getting his on-field product ready after a disappointing 2021-22 season, and he's being dragged into all of these different... And I know I'm making this very, like, Tuchel's the victim here. And I think there's part of that, but this is a nuanced discussion. But at least from this perspective, Tuchel is being given a lot of responsibility, as Taylor mentioned, that he was not necessarily eager to have. He called being involved in all that transfer stuff not his favorite thing. That's a direct quote. So that's a very real part of this, and it's absurd, frankly, that Todd Boehly would come in. All of the previous sporting director and staff would really leave, and Todd Boehly will take up that job, do it himself, go out and do Chelsea's transfer business, and then also heap all of this responsibility on Thomas Tuchel, who has a lot of other things going on as well. So again, I know this is all coming off sort of as Tuchel is the victim here. I think there is a piece of that. There is more, and Tuchel is certainly not without blame. Again, that ties into the on-field stuff and some other things we'll talk about later, but I think this does go a lot deeper than just the results on the field.
The fundamental change for me is in Todd Boehly coming in as the interim sporting director, because in the past, Tuchel had that buffer between him and the people who run Chelsea, and he had the sporting department with Marina Gravskaya and Petr Cech and Scott McLaughlin, who was the head of international recruitment, and they have all left, Joe, as you referenced there, that as soon as Todd Boehly comes in. And that robbed Tuchel of that buffer. He also had a layer that went beyond the sporting department as well between him and Abramovich, because he had Bruce Buck, who was essentially Abramovich's man at Stamford Bridge, largely because Abramovich felt he couldn't visit London for a number of years due to visa issues, and then latterly issues related to the invasion of Ukraine. But it felt like Tuchel was quite comfortable in that setting, in that structure. He just wanted to coach the team, and all of a sudden he is dragged into these situations. Joe, you mentioned him delegating meetings to his agent
which is hilarious,
Boehly.
By the way.
And there's
it's
also
so good.
There's also reports from The Athletic in the meetings that he was forced to attend. He was detached, he was incoherent in his thoughts, and I've got visions of Jesse Eisenberg in those lawyers' meetings in The Social Network. Basically, that was Thomas Tuchel in the recruitment meetings this summer. But I think that even though 2022 has been a pretty poor year for Chelsea, I think the football has been poor, and I think that's as big as anything when you're talking about what Todd Boehly wants from Chelsea, as we covered in a previous Big Thing episode. He's a man who appreciates the entertainment element of sport. And I think he's looked at how Chelsea are playing beyond whether they're actually winning games and whether fans are excited. And Chelsea have not been a fun team, an exciting team, for pretty much all of this year. So that factors into his decision. So there's something that predates Boley that's a factor, but also I think the way that the structure of the club has changed has been a massive, massive factor in what has unfolded.
Graham, some of the coverage of Tuchel in those meetings reminded me, I love Calvin Hobbs growing up. I love it to this day. And he has one where he is asked to shovel the walk and he does it really, really poorly. Like he shovels the lawn. He doesn't shovel the walkway at all. He builds like a big mound in the middle of the walkway. And his quote at the end is, sometimes if you do a job poorly enough, they don't ask you to do it again. And it did feel like Tuchel was doing, like sandbagging those meetings fully. To be like, I'll be here. I'm not going to add anything because I don't want to be here, but you're forcing me to be. And maybe didn't think that that would end in his firing. And it kind of sounds to me like maybe they had already started thinking about sacking him at that point. I have a whole theory about how long ago they decided they weren't going to continue with Thomas Tuchel.
This is interesting, Taylor. This is interesting because if I was going to make a cartoon analogy, I'd go back to, of course, The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. And there's an episode where Bart gets an elephant called Stampy. Yeah. At the end, they release him back into like a wildlife sanctuary, and Stampy goes off and starts nudging another elephant and, you know, being aggressive. And they ask why he's doing it, and the zookeeper or whatever he was says, "Well, some people, some animals are just jerks." And I thought the Tuchel victim angle is interesting, but also he might just be a jerk. And there's this perception that has been tried to be painted in the Red Top media, the paper that's named after the star at the center of the solar system.
Ah, yes.
Said the perception, a quote that sources said, the perceptions of Tuchel changed among players after he split from his wife of 13 years in May. That his character changed as well. So is he Taylor a bit stampy as well?
That feels like a very Sun line, a very Sun story. That's the paper you were talking about, right?
Yeah, but that builds in the case, I think, Graham, is the thing.
There was a really telling quote. I will try to find it. Here it is, from an Athletic piece. We're quoting The Athletic a lot. In the second half of his tenure, that approach, the approach being of direct communication with players about why they weren't being included, what they could do to be involved or to kind of elevate their position, what they needed to work on, that approach shifted dramatically. Tuchel did not initiate a single conversation with one first team player for more than a year, offering no guidance on how the player could get back into his team whenever they fell out of the starting 11. And then it continued on later. Romelu Lukaku, Timo Werner, Hakim Ziyech, Christian Pulisic, and Callum Hudson-Odoi all went into the summer deeply unhappy with their situations. And I think you see there that I think the communication issues had become pretty obvious, so much so that Tuchel holds a preseason meeting, two preseason meetings, I should say, one for players who were committed to the team, one who were uncertain about their future, and then some of the players who were uncertain, quote unquote, started their first game of the Premier League season, while those who were committed did not. And I think right there you see communication issues coming back. So it seems like there was communication issues between Tuchel and the front office, but then also communication issues between Tuchel and the squad itself.
Oh boy, it is difficult. There's a little from column A and a little from column B in this situation, it seems, doesn't it? But I mean, how much, Joe, do we think we put on Todd Boehly for this? Because it's obviously, it seems like he is a bit eccentric. It's eccentric in itself to fire someone a few days after a big loss like that, but a matter of days after the transfer window closed, in which he spent an awful lot of money shaping a team, presumably in his vision.
And signing players that seemingly were, a number of them, were picked by Tuchel. That's my, sorry to jump in there, Joe, my biggest argument against this potentially being spin from Chelsea in terms of, oh, we were thinking about this all summer long. Well, why did you sign a bunch of players that were seemingly picked by Tuchel and sign Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang on the basis that he had a strong relationship with Thomas Tuchel on deadline day and then fire him a week later? That's the confusing bit for me that makes me question that whole story. Not to question the sources of people like David Ornstein, whose reporting is solid, but just in terms of the story that Chelsea are trying to brief, I have questions about that part.
It's bizarre, right? And Graham, that ties directly into what Ryan's asking here. You know, what is the timeline here? Why are these things happening in the sequence that they're happening? And Ryan, to your initial question, I think a lot of this falls on Todd Boehly. I think there is a chance that even if Todd Boehly doesn't come in, or even if things are handled differently, that this still doesn't work out, right? We can go back to the decline. There's been this stat that's been all around the internet about the first 50 games under Tuchel and the last 50 games under Tuchel. And there's this massive change in the numbers there. Like, there's a ridiculous swing from one side to the other of those numbers. In the first 50 games under Tuchel, Chelsea, who had 32 wins, 11 draws, and 7 losses, and a plus 57 goal difference. In the last 50 games, the results aren't drastically different, but the worry signs are very much there. 28 wins, 13 draws, 7 losses. So not all that different. 4 fewer wins, you know, some additional draws. And then you have a plus 34 goal differential. So that's a large swing in the goal differential. Chelsea's still a good team, but no longer a great team. So there were problems here, even setting Todd Boehly aside. But the cultural change in the club is very real. I think a lot of this, again, the front office figures leaving and Todd Boehly becoming the interim sporting director. We talked about Todd Boehly and how sort of weird it was that he wanted to come in and do that. And that's how he chose to approach this. That was our first episode of The Big Thing. I had questions about that then and him wanting to sort of just execute trades with Inter Milan for Romelu Lukaku and some of the weirdness around that. There's questions, right? There's questions about his choices and his decisions. You read about, you know, Todd Boehly drawing up a 4-4-3 formation on accident on a whiteboard, and that's been disputed by Chelsea. And it's kind of a silly anecdote, right? We all make mistakes. I don't think we need to, you know, point any massive fingers there. But this idea that this guy's, he's not a soccer guy and he's coming in and making soccer decisions. And more than that, and I think this has a bigger impact, he's making cultural decisions about the club. So new ownership asked Tuchel to come in and do things that he maybe didn't really want to do and didn't think was really part of his purview. And then tensions build and build and they have disagreements about players. And now all of a sudden you're stuck with all these players that you brought for your last coach. Although to be fair, I think a lot of them fit very much what Graham Potter wants to do, but we can table that for now until we circle back around later. I'm not really sure that's that big of a deal, but the timeline is weird. The whole decision-making process is weird, and not just the Tuchel decision-making process, but the sporting director, the lack of sporting staff to support the front office, to support Tuchel. A lot of strange and I think very much not ideal decisions being made here.
And I can understand why Tuchel would, having worked with one of the best sporting departments in the Premier League with Marina Gravskaya, Cech and McLaughlin, that used to be his sounding board, and they would guide the transfer strategy, and Tuchel would be left largely, I'm not saying he didn't have a say in the transfer strategy then, but he would largely be left to coach the team. All of a sudden, you're sitting opposite a table with Todd Boehly, who hasn't been involved with soccer to any great deal before, and Ejbali, his right-hand man, who again hasn't really been involved in soccer. And I can understand why Tuchel would sit at that table and think, and who are you? I've won the Champions League. I've won titles in France. I've got a track record of success. I've been successful at Chelsea. And I can understand why all of a sudden having to operate under Todd Boehly as an interim sporting director without that track record of doing anything in the sport, that would grate. I can understand why that would grate with Tuchel, and it seems like he's the sort of character who would allow that to influence his outward conduct and behavior, as seems to be the case.
I'm assuming we need to go to break in a moment, Ryan. So before we do that, I'm just going to add, Joe, to your point about Todd Boehly and the 4-4-3 formation, I'm choosing to believe that that was just innovative tactics.
Oh, for sure.
For an amateur team once when I first moved back to Richmond with a manager who is now banned from the league, who is a big fan of trying to sneak on a 12th player in the middle of the game to see if the referee would notice. Yeah, interesting tactics from him. Maybe that's what Chelsea were going for. Maybe they thought VAR wouldn't pick that one up. So you never know. It could have been innovative, or it could have been maybe just more of a whiteboard mistake.
I'm just picturing Graham Thomas Tuchel saying, "Who are you?" And Todd Boehly saying, "Who am I? I'm the CEO of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. I was the one who introduced Firmino and Klopp to their dentist. That's who I am."
What's the title of that? The chief of business, or what, that Chelsea hired as well? What was that? The title of that
Tom
person
Blake's
again?
President of business. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the president of business, and who are you?
Wonderful
Nick
stuff.
Kroll's, Let's, Nick Kroll's production company is good at business with a Z. That's what it sounds like to me. He's hired at being good at business.
Yeah. Well, let's not worry, darling, about Nick Kroll for now and take a quick break. Back shortly.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to The Big Thing, which seems to be inordinately about Tom Bowley since we launched this series. But here we are again. Taylor, I have a question for you, a hypothetical. If Tom Bowley does not buy Chelsea, if I suppose we have to wind back to if the Russian invasion doesn't happen and Roman Abramovich is still in charge, is Thomas Tuchel still in charge? Are Chelsea still a big force in the Premier League and they haven't had a downturn?
I think they are. I think so. I think he is. The communication issues and the stats that Joe mentioned about first 50 games versus the most recent 50 games, those are problems. But I also think Chelsea had a problem in their squad, specifically the defense. At the end of last season, lots of players leaving, and they knew they were going to have to spend a lot of money. So I think there always would have been a transition period as they get in new signings. The number of attackers who seemed really frustrated by the way things had been going. Some of them not signed when Thomas Tuchel was the manager. Some of them signed after he became the manager. But I think for the most part, I think a lot of the issues there weren't necessarily of his own creation, aside from the results themselves. But I think a lot of the kind of backroom stuff we're talking about, a lot of the expectations on preseason and about being involved in those meetings and just taking time away from the squad, I think definitely play a part here. Because if you're taking him out of time with players, time in training, time with his assistants to be in meetings about signing Cristiano Ronaldo, I think you're taking him away from the area that he can have immediate, direct, and ideally positive influence to put him in other scenarios where he doesn't seem as welcome or as welcome to be involved.
All right, Taylor. You started Total Soccer Show as a means to broadcast your conspiracy theories, and I understand you have a few you'd like to get off your chest.
Well, there's two things. I think it's one that Graham has already sort of alluded to, which is the attempt to control the narrative here. And I think part of why we're hearing that Thomas Tuchel wasn't as involved and didn't want to be included in transfers and didn't really want to contribute meaningfully to that conversation is to then for Chelsea to then be able to say these signings in the summer were all club signings. We wanted his input. We wanted him to be involved, but he wouldn't be. He wouldn't give us useful information. So we had to do the best we could. I think looking at Aubameyang is the hardest one, I think, to sort of refute as being a Thomas Tuchel influenced decision. Obviously, the Dortmund connection is strong there. They have a personal relationship. But I think that is Chelsea sort of trying to get ahead of the story and say, like, nope, these were all our signings. None of them were him. He didn't help at all, even though it's really clear that he had demands. And even those areas where he did have demands, they then say, oh, he changed his mind. He wanted this player. Then he didn't want that player. Then he did want them again. And by then we couldn't get them. And then he was mad at us for that. And there's a lot of finger pointing, I think, on both sides. I tend to believe the individual who's being sort of pulled in a bunch of different directions. And I think part of that is also because the second thing I kind of wonder is if they decided that they were okay with getting rid of Thomas Tuchel quite some time ago.
Yes.
Probably during preseason, probably on tour in the United States. And there are a couple reasons I say that, starting with probably the least significant one, the fact that Christian Pulisic is still there. And that's a player who could have been sold for a lot of money, could have been loaned out for a pretty high fee with maybe an option to buy. And they didn't do that. They kept him there. They kept a lot of players there who seemed surplus to requirements, seemed unhappy, as I mentioned. And I do wonder if that's because they thought new manager coming in, everybody gets brought back in, and then the squad will be happy again. Everybody gets to compete for spots. So we don't want to get rid of too many players too quickly. And I think that extends to Romelu Lukaku. I have wondered for a while why they would be okay with loaning him back. You would have assumed there would have been an option to buy or an obligation to buy for a large amount of money. There would have been other clubs interested in buying him, maybe not for the amount that Chelsea spent, but for a good amount of money. And they didn't do that. They loaned him out. He will return to Chelsea next season. And I wonder again if that is because a new manager will be there, Graham Potter, we now know, and maybe Graham Potter has a whole year to figure out how to use Romelu Lukaku so that when he comes back, he is part of that squad. And it doesn't look like such a big loss for him to have gone. But the major one, I will say, relates to the signing of Cucurella. And I will pause here, forgive me, but it requires a bit of an analogy. I read a lot of Reddit. I'm a big fan of the best of Reddit updates. And there are always the stories of like, my husband came home from work and he is a new coworker and he won't stop talking about how beautiful they are and smart they are and talented and funny. And now they're spending a lot of time together. I'm not sure what to make of that. And then the update is always like, yep, it went the way I thought it would. And one of the stories I read about the Cucurella signing was that Todd Boehly knew way too much about Graham Potter's career. and I just wonder if in that moment, Thomas Tuchel thought, like, why do you, like, man, you have either done your research, which seems unlikely given some of the other questions you have asked, or you've done your research because you're going to hire this guy in my place. And I wonder if back then they had already started, like, scouting or considering their options, and some of their transfers or lack thereof make me wonder if this is a thing that's been coming. They've just been waiting for the right opportunity because ultimately I think they want to get rid of anybody connected to the Abramovich era.
And that Brighton thing, Taylor, I think is a beautiful example. That's one of the reasons why I do buy into this whole idea that Chelsea had been thinking about this for a while. There's reports that Todd Boehly flew to Greece to have discussions and personal discussions about the Mark Cucurella deal. And that deal progresses. And around that time, Boehly contacts, we're not sure if it's a phone call or what it is, he contacts Graham Potter to ask about, okay, who's this guy, you know, how's he gonna fit, what's his personality like, just to get more detail. And basically, after having some of those discussions, again, whatever medium those took, it seems like Todd Boehly was pretty well smitten with Graham Potter, and so he's realizing, oh yeah, this English coach is a pretty good dude, let's keep our eyes on him. And then we fast forward a month or a little less than a month, and Graham Potter is the new manager of Chelsea. That does not, Taylor Rockwell, feel like a coincidence.
I read that Graham Potter had been the sporting director for Ghana's women's team in 2007. I didn't know that until this week. I like to think that Todd Boehly had, like, intricate analysis of how Ghana's women's team played in 2007 and how they maybe he drew it up in a 4-4-3 formation, but he still knew everything about that team, and that maybe gave away his intentions.
Well, Graham, can I give you Ghana's or Todd Boehly's analysis of the Ghana women's team?
Go on.
Ghana have a women's team? There you go. That's Todd Boehly's analysis of that team.
Yeah, most likely.
Well, Graham, you jokingly said, I like to think that Todd Boehly was looking at that Ghana national team. But I think you like to think that because, being cynical, I think Chelsea would like us to think that. Am I too cynical that I think that this messaging that they've been looking for Graham Potter for some time is just a little story that's been spun by the club a little bit? Because I find it a little hard to believe in some respects, because I find it hard to believe that if they knew they were going to fire Tuchel in the summer, they didn't just do it and make the action happen then. It seems a little bit convenient to work this backstory in for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am suspicious of the pure briefing that's going on at the moment, that this was the plan all along. I think Taylor nails it when he says that Chelsea decided a while ago that they would be okay with firing Tuchel if the moment arose and the situation arose. And I think that's how it has panned out. I think Todd Boehly probably has had in the back of his mind that he would quite like Graham Potter, but I just look at that transfer strategy and the players that they signed, and they were still committed to Tuchel to a certain extent, but I do think they had a contingency plan and now they are acting on that contingency plan.
Yeah, it all just feels like spin to me. Still, I'm just a hardened cynic, Graham. That's the problem with me.
So am I.
That's true. By trade, anyway.
But Ryan, let me ask you this thing, because I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think it's somewhere in between. I think it is that, like, they were okay with Tuchel leaving and bringing in maybe Potter, maybe somebody else, but that it wasn't a thing they were necessarily going to act on right away. But what would be the spin then? Like, what do you think Chelsea are trying to cover up? That this is just like a panic decision to fire Tuchel and then they need to get somebody really
exactly
quickly?
That. And also, I think a lot of Chelsea fans who maybe more casual or maybe, you know, of that ilk would be expecting a Pochettino or something like that. Hmm. And they have brought in the idea that Potter has always been the one, because Boehly's had his eye on him since he was 6 years old. And it's always been Graham Potter's job. So that's the kind of thing I think plays into it too, Taylor.
Yeah, and I think Todd Boehly, from what we have, look, he's only been in charge of Chelsea for, what, like 3-4 months? So we still don't know a great deal about him. But just looking at the deals that he's made in the transfer market and how he's controlled Chelsea so far, he seems like quite an impulsive person at the moment, certainly with the how quickly transfers have happened over the summer. So I could believe that Todd Boehly, who was in Zagreb, by the way, for that game, he's travelled to Croatia for that game and he's watched Chelsea turn in a dreadful performance, and in the heat of having watched that, he's made a hasty decision. and now they're trying to spin it as this was the plan all along. I could believe that. I think there might be something in that, but I agree with Taylor. I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. You've got the two extremes of Tuchel's been hard done by, and Todd Bowley's had a plan all along, and I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
Well, does anyone think, I think we can all agree, and this seems like a pretty obvious thing, that the timing of this decision is dreadful, right? Having spent more money than any Premier League team in the transfer window for a coach to play those players and shape them into a title-winning team. Now that coach is gone, the coach that we assume wanted those players at least to a certain extent. We can all agree that the timing is bad. Does anyone think, though, that Tuchel shouldn't have been fired? Does anybody think that he should still be in charge of Chelsea today? It seems clear to me, I guess I'll say, and maybe this is spin, right? I don't know. I don't have any context in this area. It seems to me that the relationship between Thomas Tuchel and his players and the relationship between Thomas Tuchel and his bosses were both bad. You might be able to get away with one of those relationships being fractured in some way, but both feels incredibly difficult to bounce back from. I think Thomas Tuchel is a good coach. I think, and from all reporting, he was a really good man manager at Chelsea for a year or so. Something changed, and maybe that's additional pressure from the ownership. Maybe that's even happening a little bit before the ownership changes, and there's a lot of pressure coming in from him from the Russian takeover and all of those things with Roman Abramovich selling the club and all of those things. There's a lot of pressure that comes from that. But does anybody really think that Tuchel should still be in charge of this team?
It's a decision that I wouldn't have made I wouldn't have sacked him after that Dinamo Zagreb game, because I think I've got mixed thoughts on this, because I'm not confident that he would have turned it around. But I think we're 7 games into the season. Chelsea have made a huge number of new signings, spent a lot of money. They've also allowed a number of big players to leave the club over the summer. And this summer, we said it in our Premier League preview, was always going to be a transitional one, and it was going to take time for him to mold that team into something new. And the transfer window only closed last week, so it feels like he didn't really have an opportunity to do that. So if you look at things on the pitch, I struggle to make a case that I would have sacked him. But I accept what you say there, Joe, about relationships with players and bosses. I am not privy to those relationships. So maybe if I had been in the situation that Todd Bowley was in, I might have sacked him. But in terms of on the pitch stuff, I wouldn't. That's not the decision I would have made.
I think I understand why they did. I think I also don't think I would have in that moment, because, like, Chelsea, and this is not a point that I am the first to make, Chelsea under Tuchel, they get criticized by their own supporters for being boring, for being dull, for not being particularly attacking. That's kind of been their brand. They've been a very good defensive team under Tuchel. It's been kind of the hallmark of how they've won games. Then you have the attackers who can do things and make stuff happen, but you have this defensive foundation. And so I think when you lose a lot of that foundation, and then you have probably your most important midfielder, maybe the most important player on your team, in N'Golo Kanté, unable to play, I think it's going to have an immediate effect on results and on the way that team plays. I don't think the recruitment necessarily is on him, and the way the kind of squad has been assembled and some of the players that were allowed to leave, I think that is also outside issues kind of coming into play. So he gets this team that needs restructuring and kind of reinvigoration to have the defensive stability, but still also has to figure out the attacking side. And I think to pull the trigger now is, I think, premature, because there's still that chance that he could have gotten the defensive foundation right and then figured some things out from there. But I think with the way that they went about their recruitment in not selling some of the players I've already mentioned, but then with some of those communication issues on top, I understand why they might not have gotten better. And it sounds like the ownership group decided it doesn't seem like it's going to change. We have a hard time believing that communication is suddenly going to be perfect between him and the squad, that results are going to turn around right away. So sunk cost fallacy, let's get rid now and not sort of stick around till the World Cup. But I do think for what he's been able to achieve, it's a bit premature in my mind to put it all on one person. You get rid of him, you bring in Graham Potter. You still don't have a ton of other people there.
Certainly.
Who are sort of helping make those decisions. It feels a bit like they are putting it all on Thomas Tuchel, because they themselves may have made some mistakes along the way.
All right, let's pull some out for Thomas Tuchel then, who leaves Chelsea with just his £13 million payoff, his Champions League and Club World Cup on his resume, and the likelihood he'll be employed by someone else who will give him millions and millions.
Juventus.
Poor guy. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's look to the future under Graham Potter. Back shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Well, luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to The Big Thing. We are looking ahead in our crystal balls to Chelsea's very near future. Joe Lowry, Graham Potter, what does he do with this squad of players who was built for someone else? Is it going to go well?
I don't know. I don't know, Ryan. I'll start there. There's a lot of intrigue around this hire. Graham Potter, first of all, as a character, is an awesome story, right? He sort of rises to relative hipster prominence, I'll put it that way, during his time coaching in Sweden. Then he comes to the UK, ends up coaching with Swansea, then he's coaching with Brighton, and has a lot of success, right? Did incredible things in Sweden with small teams, relatively speaking. And now has had some really incredible success with Brighton as well. Tactically, I think he is one of the brightest English managers, if not the best and brightest English manager in the world right now. He's an exciting dude, and I think this is a cool next step in his story. Tactically, he kind of plays like Thomas Tuchel. And that's why I said earlier in the show, I don't think it is the worst thing. I whether Chelsea fell backwards into this or whether this really was the plan all along, I don't know. And frankly, doesn't really matter. But I will say, it is not the worst thing that they went out there and did all of that business, because Graham Potter likes to play with a back three a lot of the time, not totally married to it, but likes a back three, likes to play with possession, likes to dominate the ball when he can, likes to press, likes to counter press, likes to start attacks high up the field. He plays like modern dominant teams do. He coaches like a lot of the most famous coaches in the world. He doesn't have the same experience, but he does a lot of the same stuff. So adding in players like Cucurella, who he already knows, adding players like aggressive center backs and Koulibaly and Fofana, that's not bad. Raheem Sterling certainly fits in this team. There is a logical fit for a lot of these players, maybe not all of them, and I'm sure Potter would have chosen to do things differently if he could have shaped this squad. But that's Graham Potter. My one question about this fit, and Graham, I know you said you had a question about it, so I'm curious what you think, is Brighton's attacking numbers, really outside of this year, have never been all that special. And Chelsea's attacking numbers right now really aren't all that special either. It seems to me, and Taylor, you said this earlier, to just spread the love right now, that, you know, Chelsea have been a really sort of conservative team. And that's kind of their brand. That was kind of their brand under Tuchel, frustratingly so at times. So great success at other times, but frustratingly so at times. Kieran Doyle pointed this out on Twitter. You know, Brighton's attacking numbers, you go through and look at the chances they've created, have been sort of squarely mid-table under Graham Potter. He has not elevated that part of the team to the next level like he did with their build-up structure, like he did with their possession, like he did with a lot of their defensive stuff. They were 12th, Brighton, under Graham Potter, in XG last year in the Premier League. 12th, right? That's not terrible, but it's not great. It's not eye-catching. They were below Southampton last year in that stat. This year's been better, but I mean, it's early, right? It's been a month of the Premier League season. Is that sustainable? It's not a big enough sample size for us to really know. So that's my one question, is Potter going to fix the thing that I think, Taylor, I know you mentioned the defense, but I really think it's the attack that needs to be rejuvenated. And I don't know if Potter can do that. I don't know that we've seen that, at least in his time in the Premier League, but maybe we start seeing it over the next couple of weeks.
I worry about the profile of the midfielders that Chelsea have in relation to what Potter will want at Chelsea. I look at how Brighton line up in terms of their formation, and yes, there's significant overlap there, so Brighton like to play a back three. Chelsea, under Tuchel, like to play a back three, and they've rebuilt their defence in terms of personnel. Brought in Fofana, brought in Koulibaly, they already have Thiago Silva, Cesar Azpilicueta can play in a back three, and then they've got wing-backs. Obviously, one of them, as we've mentioned, Cucurella, was at Brighton previously, and then on the right side, you've got Rhys James, one of the best wing-backs in world football. So I'm not too concerned about large portions of this team. Joe, I share your concerns about the attack, but that midfield unit that Brighton have is they just have about three or four players in that unit that are brilliant two-way players. They basically do it all, and they're very fluid. And sometimes players like Mwepu, you'll find him in the attacking third, and Alexis McAllister, he likes to push into the attacking third. But then all of a sudden, you'll find Alexis McAllister on the edge of his own box, providing protection for the back three. And I look at that Chelsea midfield, which is predominantly, I know he's out injured at the moment, Kante, but it's predominantly Jorginho and Kante, who are both over the age of 30. I worry about the workload that's going to be put on them. Maybe you bring in Kovacic, but even Kovacic, I think, sometimes likes to slow down the game and doesn't play at the intensity and the pace that Potter will look for. And of course, the transfer window is now closed, so maybe Chelsea would have signed a player to help Potter in the centre of the pitch, but they can't do that now until January. So I think he's going to have to make some compromises in that midfield. It's an interesting appointment, no matter which way you look at it, and I do worry that he's going to have a lot of the same issues that Tuchel had in terms of the structure of that team. Potter's very much a coach. He likes to coach his players on the training pitch and leave the kind of scouting and recruitment to somebody else, which at Brighton, they have that network. As we've covered in depth, Chelsea don't have that at the moment. That network right now is Todd Boehly. And Todd Boehly, when January comes, might get on the phone to Graham Potter and do exactly what he did with Tuchel and look for advice. And Potter might not be that interested in offering that much advice. So I would say Chelsea need to get a sporting director in as soon as possible. Make sure it's someone that likes Potter, wants to work with Potter, that there's an alignment with that vision. Because that's the other thing I would say, is Chelsea have kind of done this the wrong way round. I would say you'd want to get the sporting director in first, then get your manager, so that the sporting director has an input in that. But they've gone ahead and done it the backwards way. So now you need to reverse engineer it, and you need to get a sporting director that will work with Potter. If they do that and they get the structure in place, then I think Potter has a good chance of success.
Nothing like building the plane while you're flying it, Graham. Nothing like
Indeed.
It.
Good analogy. Taylor, one last question from me.
Is there?
Graham Potter has been widely tipped as a likely candidate to be the next England manager. Is there a scenario where England are disappointing in this coming World Cup?
Yeah, there is.
perhaps at the hands of the USMNT. Thank you for jumping in, Joe.
Nice, Taylor. Good stuff.
And coincidentally, Graham Potter has not done very well at Chelsea, and a little Chelsea to England switcheroo occurs.
I doubt that Graham Potter would jump ship from Chelsea unless it goes horrifically wrong there. Sean Dyche is just waiting in the wings to take over England, and that's the appointment that I want to see happen.
Worm ball, baby.
one of the interesting aspects of the reports around Potter was, it must have been The Athletic, because I've been reading a lot of The Athletic. There's a lot of good reporting there around Chelsea at the moment. But one of the things was, Potter, from his point of view, he doesn't see it as much of a risk because he thinks everyone is aware of the structural issues that Chelsea have. And so if he fails, it won't be on him. It will be on Chelsea. And all I have to say is give Ralf Rangnick a call and ask him about how his reputation took a beating at Manchester United.
That's an incredibly charitable way to view the British media right there from Graham
Indeed,
Potter.
It's all those Barca players signing this summer and like happily like, it's going to be great, as all the other Barca players are like forced out the door and publicly humiliated, and they're just thinking like, that won't be me, surely. We'll see how that plays out. We'll see how it plays out for Graham Potter. But I do think in the end, it's a things can be two things sort of moment, because I don't think it was an obvious mistake to fire Thomas Tuchel, but I'm also not sure that like he was the correct person to continue on. But at the same time, I think Graham Potter is a smart hire. So I think it's a strange situation, but I think Graham Potter going in will make it a better situation, at least for the Chelsea squad.
There we go, guys. Good news. We have big thinged for another week. Thank you, listener, for joining us on this one. Let us know if you're enjoying the big thing. Let us know what you think about Graham Potter's future at Chelsea. But for now, Taylor Rockwell, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ryan Bailey.
Graham Ruthven, pleasure, sir.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey.
Joe Lowry, keep knocking him out of the park, kid.
Right back at you.
And listener, thank you very much for joining us once again. We'll be back on the feed, but for now, bye.